Welcome to another Ag Perspectives podcast. My name is Ron Hayes. Glad to be along with you today. And joining us is Dr. Darrell Peel, Extension Livestock Market Economist at Oklahoma State University. Had the opportunity to catch up with Dr. Peel in his office on campus in Stillwater on homecoming Friday at Oklahoma State University as the cattle on feed numbers from USDA released at 2 p.m. Central Time Friday afternoon, October 19th, shortly after we asked Dr. Peel about those numbers.
Well, the placements, the all eyes were on the placements as usual this month, looking for a decrease in placements, and they were down actually a little more than expected on average. Placements came in 81% of last year's number. The marketing's total for September was slightly below the expectations as well, about 88% of last year. And that gives us an on-feed total for October 1st of 97% of last year, down a full 3%, which is a little bit smaller number than the average guess going into the report.
When we think about placements that much bigger, I mean, that 19% decrease in placements from a year ago, that's significant.
It really is significant, and I guess, to me, it tells the tale that we finally have sort of run out of rope in terms of our ability to find cattle. We know these numbers have been getting tighter. For many months, they've been getting tighter and tighter, but there's so much dynamics in this industry. You can push things a lot farther than you think, usually, but at some point, you just run out of rope, and I think that's what's happened here. Our own feeder supplies have been getting tighter. The Mexican cattle imports are dropping off sharply as we speak because they're also in, kind of on the back end of a drought, if you will. And so for all of those reasons, and this is really just the beginning of what's going to be the situation for many more months now. We're going to go through ever tighter supplies for, the next 18 to 24 months.
When we think about marketings of this particular report, you said, again, substantially under 1 year ago.
Marketings were also down, and that's a function of a couple of things. A lot of it's a function of the fact that because of the droughts the last 2 years, many of our placements have been lighter weight placements, and so we take longer to market them. We've got more flexibility on when to market them. But, over time, obviously, the marketings are going to go down simply because there aren't as many cattle on the feed, cattle on feed in the feedlots. And so, right now it's more a matter of those dynamics of the mix of cattle that are in the markets. But as we go forward, it's just going to be the fact that we don't have as many cattle.
3% fewer cattle than a year ago, October 1 to October 1. Is this the start of an extended run of really being under a year ago, you think?
I really do. We've had a couple of sort of false starts down that road and either because of the drought or because of things. I suppose it's conceivable we could have a month here or there, once or twice more, that would jump up and be above year earlier levels, but I really don't expect it. I think pretty consistently for the foreseeable future, we're going to see year-over-year increases every month in this on-feed total, just because of the reality of where we are with cattle numbers.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you're seeing from this overall situation, the tightness of our cattle herd, of our available supplies of calves, and all of that. The drought of 2011 versus 2012. You were telling me that we really saw the dramatic drawdown a year ago, not so much in 12.
I think that's true. I think part of it's just a function of the drought last year, even though it was a big area, but it was a very confined region in the southern plains. But it happened to overlay such a big percentage of our total cattle supplies. And the nature of the drought in 2011 was very different. We had no spring. The drought really started, obviously, in the fall of 2010 and extended consistently through the fall of 2011. And so the impacts on forage production and the impacts on what producers had to do in terms of culling cattle and moving cattle were much more dramatic. 2012, by contrast, we had a bit of a spring. It was in a much bigger geographic area as far as being the entire middle of the country, if you will, but we had more forage to start with. We had more hay to start with. And so even though some people were forced to market calves a little bit early, a few folks sold cows early, we're not seeing in total anywhere near the kinds of forced cattle movements unexpected or unplanned marketings of cattle in 2012. We didn't see it in the southern plains, partly because we were just down on numbers. We had already done that liquidation, but in areas that didn't liquidate in 2011, it wasn't as severe, even though it was plenty severe in the grand scheme of things.
You were telling me that you have had some communications with some friends in Nebraska that have been watching the Nebraska situation. You know, that for the last couple of months at least, their pasture and range conditions have been awful. They're, 95-97% poor to very poor, and that means not much option for their mama cow herd there.
You know, one of the things, frankly, that has surprised me a little bit when you look at those forage estimates is that we haven't seen more cow liquidation in some regions as we might have. And that seems to be being borne out now, at least anecdotally, with indications that some of these producers are scrambling. They're trying very hard to hang on to these cows. They're utilizing corn stalks either in a grazing situation. They're using baled corn stalks. We have anecdotal reports of significant numbers of cows that are being put in feedlots to basically to maintain them in a dry lot setting just to feed them, because they're going to be relying on things like baled corn stalks. And so you know, some of the drought impacts actually may yet be ahead of us. Some folks may figure out over the next month or so that they have to go ahead and cull a few more cows than they plan. But I think all in all, folks have scrambled around and they're trying very hard not to have to do that.
Coming back to home, a lot drier. It's very spotty this year in Oklahoma and the southern plains on our moisture. We've got some wheat up, but really there's not much wheat pasture.
There's not much wheat pasture yet. There's a few spots that, you know, are in better shape than others. There's some areas that are still very dry. I think the key here is that most areas have very little deep moisture to work with, so we're very reliant on continued arrival of timely rains. If we get it, I think we have potential for significant wheat pasture, but I think it is somewhat risky this year, and it's going to be more spread out because of the variability in moisture around the state. It's going to come on at a little bit different rates, so we're not going to see the single crush of demand, if you will, at one point in time. I think the demand will develop slowly over the next couple of months and perhaps even longer, depending on how the moisture situation is over that same time period.
When we think about some of the things we've seen working through the pipeline, more to that feedlot area and the wholesale box beef trade numbers, carcass weights have gotten really big.
Carcass weights, you know, have been heavy all year, you know, been running generally 17 to 20 pounds above a year ago. I think much of that, frankly, is related to the beta agonist technology that's being adopted in feedlots. Kind of a one-time increase that we're seeing, as really the majority of the cattle feeding now is adopting that technology. So we won't see that in the future. It's kind of a one-time kick. And our expectations for next year are to see almost no change in carcass weights on a year-over-year basis. And so I think the fact that we've had that this year has kept us from seeing some of the supply pressure at the wholesale and retail level we would have seen. Slaughter's down about 4%, but total beef production is down only about half of that this year because of the increase in carcass weights. That won't be true next year. We're looking at 4.5% decrease in slaughter next year and over 4% decrease in total beef production to match it. And so the supply pressure at that level will be very much more pronounced in 2013 and 2014.
You mentioned the technology that feedlots are turning to, that they're using on our finishing cattle. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, the latest sort of technology among several technologies we've used for many years, but the latest one is called beta agonist. Generally, it's a feed additive that's used at the very end of the feeding period, only in about the last 3 weeks of feeding. That's what it's intended to be. That's what it's labeled for use as. But in that very short period of time at the end of the feeding period, it adds 30 to close to 50 pounds in some cases of live weight to those animals at the end. And so you get a significant increase in carcass and as a result of that. And so, you know, it contributes to the cost efficiencies in the industry.
You mentioned the fact that we've got tighter and tighter beef supplies ahead of us. I mean, at what point do we really run square into problems with the consumer, both here and abroad?
Well, I think we're already seeing those in some sense. I mean, as we go forward, it gets to be a bigger issue because the supply pressure will be even greater. But, you know, this year, repeatedly, we're now, for the third time this year, sort of bumping up in that $1.95 to $2 range for choice box beef, and that $2 ceiling seems to be a very, very strong barrier to us right now. I think it's a very strong psychological barrier at the wholesale and retail level. I do think we'll go through it. We may go through it before the end of this year. If not, I think there's an even greater chance we'd go through it in the first quarter of next year. Until we do, we're going to see this tremendous margin squeeze. The supply pressure from the bottom end in terms of live animal numbers is not going to go away anytime soon. And so we will push through that, I think, at some point. But it's clearly a limitation right now. I think beef demand in the U.S. is improving, but I think it's improving pretty much lockstep with the rate at which the general economy is improving. And that's a pretty sluggish rate right now. Yeah. And so that's going to be the real challenge. There's going to be more supply pressure faster next year, and the real question is will the beef demand and the general economy keep up with that? And that's going to be a big challenge.
Of course, in kind of in sync with that, we've got finally the Japanese thinking about lifting that 20-month rule, maybe going to a 30-month carcass standard. Do we have any beef we can sell them?
Well, we'll have beef, although it's going to be more expensive. And really, I think there's two things. One is I think the impact of the Japanese rule is it's there. It's positive. I don't think it's as big maybe as some people are hoping for at this point. And I think to some extent it's already in the market. So I'm not looking for that to have a real dramatic, pronounced effect that you can pick out when it happens. But it's positive. All in all, we expect exports in 2013 to be down in absolute tonnage, partly because we're not producing as much beef. And in fact, if you look at exports as a percent of beef production, they'd probably be about constant in 2013. But just for price reasons alone, it's going to be more expensive. Obviously, it depends on what happens to the exchange rate, but it's pretty easy for U.S. beef to get priced out of some markets. That's a big impact, for example, right now in the Mexican market, and has been since about 2008. We've been largely priced out of that market, and that's why our exports to Mexico have dropped ever since the peak in 2008.
Let's talk and kind of wrap up and talk a little bit about what is ahead for the various segments of our beef pipeline, the cow-calf guy, the stocker guy, feedlot guy. How are things going to be different? In other words, this is almost as a different world that we're facing.
Well, I really do think we've kind of turned the corner into a different way of operating as an industry. From a very long-term view, I mean, I don't expect grains to be as cheap in the future as they have been in the past. And in a world of higher-priced grains, that really implies structural change in the beef industry. Over the last, a really long period of time, 40 years or more, we've evolved from a, more forage-based industry to a very grain-intensive industry. And the reality of high-priced grain and high-priced fuel and fertilizer that goes along with that implies that we probably go back to being a more forage-based industry. So when you break that down, I think what it means for the cow-calf sector, the main thing for the next 5 or so years is going to be just the fact that cattle numbers are so tight. We have a need to rebuild to some level, and so there will be incentives. The calf prices will be there. I think the real challenge for cow-calf producers will be cost management, and whether or not high prices translates into profits will really depend on the ability to manage the cost side more than anything else. The stocker side probably actually has the best opportunity of anybody in this because there is such an incentive in a world of high-priced grain to utilize more forage. In the place you use more forage in the live cattle production process is at the stocker level. You increase placement weights. You've got a wider range to work in. You've got more flexibility to utilize different kinds of animals in a stocker program and different kinds of stocker programs. And so I think there's a significant opportunity in that respect, even though, again, input costs will be somewhat high. On the other side, the next step up is where it really gets tough. The feedlot sector, we're sort of saying we're evolving against or evolving away a little bit from grain use in this industry. Numbers are tight. Feed is expensive. And so I think the struggle will continue there for feedlots. We had news this last week of a feedlot in Kansas closing the doors. I think there will be some more of that over the next 1 to 2 years, and that'll address some of that excess capacity that's been a problem in the industry for a long time.
So change is really upon us in a very real sense.
Change is upon us. It's full of challenges, but it's also got opportunities in it for a lot of places if you look for those. And so I think the trick is to try to anticipate where there are opportunities in all of this and embrace those rather than just trying to hang on to what has worked so well in the past but may not work so well in the future.
When do we finally rebuild the mama cow herd? And how big does it get?
Well, that's two very different questions. Obviously, Mother Nature holds the key. If 2013 is not a drought year, then we start by stopping liquidation. And I suspect it takes a year. So with no drought in 2013, we probably don't grow much, but we stop liquidating. And then we begin growth from there in 2014. My best estimates now, just kind of playing with the numbers that as I see them today, is that by, you know, somewhere around 2016, we might be back to the same levels we were at the beginning of 2011, before the first year of drought. Beyond that, how high we could go is going to depend on the demand side of this thing, and so we really have to wait and see how domestic and international demand plays out. Certainly, I think we could grow beyond that, but how much more will depend really on the global situation, probably more than anything else.
Thank you, Daryl. Dr. Daryl Peel, Extension Livestock Market Economist at Oklahoma State University, talking with us about a whole variety of things, starting with this last Friday's Cattle on Feed set of numbers. Have yourself a great day, everybody, on the Oklahoma Farm Report. I'm Ron Hayes.